On this week's edition of New York Now, marijuana is now legal in New York for adult recreational use, but sales won't start for at least a year. We've got an in-depth look at the new law and what you should expect. Then, Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes was one of the lead negotiators on marijuana. She joins us to discuss the final agreement. And later, we'll get an update on the state budget and Governor Cuomo with Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio and Gannett's John Campbell. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation
law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Get another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. Governor Cuomo and state lawmakers have spent the last several weeks hammering out a $200 billion state budget, but you wouldn't know it. And that's because, like every other year, the budget has been negotiated behind closed doors, with very few updates from Cuomo and lawmakers involved in the process. And that's actually not unusual in New York. But what is unusual is how the process played out this year. Usually, we could get a sense of what was going on just by stopping to chat with lawmakers at the state capitol. But because of COVID, we can't do that this year. And as of Friday morning, Cuomo hadn't spoken to the press in more than a week. And all of that has turned a situation that's already usually shrouded in secrecy to something that's just been totally opaque. Senate Republican leader Rob Ort.
With COVID, with the restrictions in the building, with Zoom being much... I do think it lends itself more to secrecy, less to transparency, in a place that already was pretty good at secrecy and no transparency to begin with, right?
And we'll talk more about the state budget a little bit later in the show. But first, marijuana is now fully legal to use in New York and possess. The state legislature approved a bill this week to legalize the drug, and it's already been signed by Governor Cuomo. And while some parts of the bill will take effect immediately, others are months or years away, and some already want changes. Take a look. Marijuana will soon be legal in New York for adult recreational use. The state legislature approved a massive bill this week to legalize and tax the drug, but retail sales won't start until sometime next year at the earliest. The bill creates a new cannabis control board, which will license new marijuana growers and sellers, create new regulations for the industry, and more. And all that takes time, but supporters hope it doesn't take too much time. Kaylin Kastetter is a marijuana policy analyst in New York and a vice chair of the New York Cannabis Growers and Processors Association.
The biggest downside of the bill is that there's no deadlines for when they need to get these licenses rolled out and the program rolled out, right? So it could be sitting here 18 months from now, and we could be having issues rolling out the program. I mean, I hope not, but that's definitely conceivable.
And the new industry will need time to grow, literally. Despite its common nickname, weed, cannabis plants take several weeks to mature enough for harvest. And then there's the time required to process the plant into other products, like topicals and edibles. That's all to say that retail sales of marijuana in New York won't be starting anytime soon. Heather Trella is a fellow at the Rockefeller Institute of Government, a nonpartisan think tank.
There's some clues, but there's nothing definite. So, for example, the taxation structure does not kick in until the fiscal year that starts April 1, 2022. So no retail sales could happen before that.
But the legislation does a lot more than just make the drug legal to sell and use in New York. For one, you can expect a 13% sales tax at the register. And most of that revenue would go to the state. The rest would go to local governments. That's a lower tax rate than what we see in neighboring Massachusetts, but a higher tax rate than what's expected in New Jersey. And we now know what the state plans to do with that tax revenue. 40% would go to New York schools, and 20% would be used for drug education and treatment programs. The rest would be reinvested through grants for communities disproportionately impacted by the prohibition of marijuana, notably communities of color. And for supporters of legalization, that was crucial to include in the new law. Melissa Moore is the New York State Director of the Drug Policy Alliance.
Because we know criminalization and prohibition, the impacts have been far more than arrests. I mean, that in and of itself is devastating for people, but it's also tied in with so many other things that are going to have a major impact in New Yorkers' lives.
But there are concerns from the cannabis industry over other taxes the law will place on the product. For one, there's an additional tax at the wholesale level. That's before it gets to consumers. And that tax will be based on the potency of the marijuana product, rather than a flat rate. That's measured by THC, the psychoactive ingredient in cannabis products. Cassetter said that's going to complicate things for cannabis cultivators.
This THC-based tax has never been done before. And the problem is that the nature of cannabis is that the THC varies plant to plant. And so across a batch, you could have, you know, multiple points, percentage points difference between, you know, cannabis.
And the bill will also keep a 7% tax on medical marijuana. But leaders from the industry say there shouldn't be a tax on medical marijuana at all, like with other medical products. Negus DeBebe is the president of the New York Medical Cannabis Industry Association and director of public policy for Columbia Care, a medical marijuana company.
There is a tax on medical products, which is interesting because we don't tax cough syrup, we don't tax Tylenol in New York, and medical cannabis for patients should be moving in towards being treated like other wellness or other medications, whether they're over the counter or prescription.
But the bill will also make some major changes to medical marijuana in New York. For one, the state is scrapping the list of conditions that currently make someone eligible for medical marijuana. Now, as long as a doctor says marijuana could help someone medically, they can get a prescription. Senator Dianne Savino was one of the main architects of the state's medical program.
And then we go further to say, and any other condition that a prescriber would determine would benefit the patient, to kind of get the State Department of Health out of the doctor's visit. You know, doctors know best what's for their patients, and we trust them to make those decisions.
But it's worth noting that insurance doesn't pay for medical marijuana. That's partly because of the federal prohibition on the drug, but it's also because of state law. Savino says the state should explore ways for insurance to cover medical marijuana.
Makes no sense. And only the only way to change that is either reschedule marijuana at the federal level or, you know, states are going to continue to push the envelope. And that's what I'm going to do. You know, we're going to tackle the insurance industry issue. We need to tackle the banking industry issue. We need to tackle, you know, federal tax policy so that these businesses, if they do get their doors open, you know, are able to thrive. And you can't do that with a complicated tax process in Washington. So we are far from done.
In the meantime, medical marijuana companies will now be allowed into the recreational market. And that could be a huge boost for the new industry, given that medical providers already have the infrastructure in place to grow and process the drug. Here's a bevy again.
There's still more to be done, but we will be able to supply other retailers, which is especially key in the early stages of a market, because bringing cultivation online takes a lot longer than opening a dispensary.
But other parts of the new law will take effect immediately, like new laws on marijuana possession. It will now be legal to carry 3 ounces of marijuana at any time, and up to 5 pounds will be allowed at home. So if you happen to already have a legal amount of marijuana, you can't be arrested for it. But if you have any more than what's allowed, you could be charged with a misdemeanor or a felony, depending on the amount. That's still a huge shift from the current law, and supporters of legalization say it's another step toward complete decriminalization.
I mean, I think there's always more to be done in terms of, you know, shifting away from the use of the criminal legal system. I think this is an incredible start. It's a huge positive shift from where we've been for decades in New York.
But others want tougher criminal laws on marijuana, and they're worried the new law doesn't go far enough to keep roads safe from impaired drivers and prevent children from using the drug. Patrick Phelan is a former police chief from Monroe County who's now the executive director of the Associations of Chiefs of Police.
Well, I'm not talking about stopping a guy from sitting in his backyard smoking a joint. You know, honestly, I really don't care. But I know that people are going to get in traffic crashes and they're going to die.
The law requires the state to partner with a college or university to study how members of law enforcement could best detect when someone's driving while impaired by the drug. And the state will also set aside money to train more officers on how to recognize when someone is intoxicated. But members of law enforcement say they're worried about what could happen in the meantime. Rob Machiel is the sheriff of Oneida County.
Legalizing marijuana will certainly make our communities less safe. We feel strongly that we should be taking the time to look at the mistakes that other states have made Let's learn from those mistakes. Let's not repeat them.
It's possible that we could see progress on those issues before retail sales start, which again won't be until sometime next year at the earliest. And the law will allow individuals to grow the plant at home, but not until after retail sales start. So while hopes are high from supporters to jumpstart the new cannabis industry, there's still a long, complicated ways to go until New York's first legal sale. So discussions on marijuana legalization are obviously far from over in New York, but this also isn't a new issue. Some lawmakers have worked on it for years, slowly making progress along the way. One of them is Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoplestokes, a Democrat from Buffalo, who led negotiations this year to legalize the drug. I spoke with her this week about the new law and what's next in the conversation over marijuana in New York. Majority Leader Crystal Peoplestokes, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me.
Of course. So before we get to what's actually in the bill, I should note that you've been advocating for this for more than 7 years now, and now the bill has been signed into law. How do you feel right now?
Overjoyed. I'm excited for the difference that it's going to make in so many people's lives, people who I don't even know, but they're going to have a new opportunity, and I'm grateful that we can make that happen for them.
So I think the big question in everyone's minds right now after the bill has been signed into law is, how long is it going to take before the first retail sales start in New York? Obviously, there's a lot to happen before then, but based on your expectations, based on the bill, when do you think we could start seeing the first retail sales?
Well, based on my experience and looking at what other states and, by the way, Canada have done, it generally would take about 18 months to 2 years, but honestly, you know, we're New Yorkers. I don't think it's going to take us that long. I'm going to suspect that it's going to take a minimum, though, at least a year, maybe 18 months. So I think we are going to get started aggressively trying to look at how the board structures will look. That is going to be key to begin putting things in place. And I anticipate that can happen relatively quickly. In fact, I'll be having some conversations with the speaker and others soon about that topic.
So now that the bill has been signed into law, you can immediately make those appointments to the Cannabis Control Board to get the process started. Is that right?
Yes. We'd like to get that started as soon as possible.
So when retail sales do start, you've come up with a tax rate on retail sales of 13%. That's less than we see in Massachusetts, but it might actually be a little bit higher than what we see in New Jersey. Can you talk to me about how you arrived at the 13% and if you're worried at all about people downstate maybe going to New Jersey to buy the drug rather than buying from shops in New York?
I actually am not. I think it's competitive. And, you know, New York has a lot that Jersey doesn't. People will come to New York to do things that don't even live here. And so I think that our tax rate is competitive. It's not my preferred rate, but I think it is competitive and I think we'll do fine with it.
So let's talk about what happens with the tax revenue that the state is going to collect from marijuana sales. 40% of what the state collects is going to be reinvested in communities that have been disproportionately impacted by the state's prohibition on marijuana. You were a big supporter of that, a big advocate for making that happen. Are you happy with the 40% of the revenue as the share? And what do you envision for communities that want to apply for those grants? What do you see there?
I'm delighted at that percentage. As you know, the legislation was originally introduced with a 50% requirement. But, you know, this is negotiations and you have to start somewhere. And I'm not disappointed at all with the results that we have. And I think those dollars should go directly into the lives of those people who were incarcerated, as well as their children and the communities that they live in. The next thing to do is to determine what are the people who have suffered that harm, what do they need? I think what they may need in Utica could be very different than what they need in Buffalo. It could be very different than what they need in the Bronx as compared to Syracuse or Binghamton. And so it depends on the person, it depends on the community. It could be things like taking the lead out of people's houses who live in impoverished conditions because they haven't been able to work because they had to check that felony box on an application. And so there are a number of things that we can do to invest in the lives of people and make them better. And I think we have to go about finding out what they are and getting them done. You know, honestly, most medicines you can get with an insurance card as well, but you can't use an insurance card to get medical marijuana. So there are some differences, and sometimes it's hard to compare them as if they're apples and apples when they're actually apples and oranges.
You bring up a really good point about insurance. Insurance doesn't cover medical marijuana in New York State, and that's partly because of the federal prohibition. Some states have tried to experiment with having insurance cover it. Do you think that we could try something like that in New York?
Well, I think one of the things that New York does for any issue as across the nation is that it leads. And so even though we're not number one in legalizing, I think we can be number one in the advocacy for getting access to insurance coverage. And I think that we also can be number one in demonstrating how you legalize and putting equity as an intentional piece rather than as a second thought. And I think given those things that there is potential for the federal government to move a little quicker towards removing the barriers that prohibit insurance for medical marijuana.
And I feel like we have to talk about the criminal justice aspect of this, which I think was an impetus of the bill, obviously. In New York State and around the country, marijuana arrests have been disproportionately targeted towards people of color and not so much toward people that look like me. And I'd like you to speak to that, because I feel like a lot of people in the state just haven't had to deal with that issue, so they may not be familiar with why this has been important.
Well, I think you're exactly right. Most people don't get it. Any study will tell you that the majority of people who use marijuana in this country look more like you than I. But I happen to be the look of the person who ended up going to jail on a regular basis, and even for small amounts. I mean, there are some people in places in this country that are still in jail for having a nickel bag of marijuana. Yet, two states away, people are selling it as a legal product or either selling it as a medical product. And it's just something that's so unfair about that. And so if you don't fix the criminal justice part of it, you really haven't done anything, in my estimation, by legalizing it.
Is there anything that wasn't included in the bill that you wish had just made it in there? Any parts of the original MRTA, or maybe that weren't even in the MRTA, that you wish had been in this bill?
You know, I don't want to digress. You know, I think I'm satisfied with the three-way bill that we agreed to do on yesterday. And I think if there are opportunities to do any future tucks to it or tweaks or technical issues, we can do that. I think what's more important now is that Governor Cuomo has signed it and that we needed to move with some speed in putting together the board structure, because implementation is more important than the legislation. And here we're talking about people's lives. We don't have a choice but to be successful. And so now my desire is to see that implementation is properly done.
All right, we'll be looking out for it. Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. Have a great day and stay safe.
And now an update on where things stand with the state budget and Governor Cuomo. You might remember the book he published last year. Well, new reporting this week suggests he may have used state resources to write it and promote it, and that could be illegal. So let's dig into that and more with this week's panel. Karen DeWitt is from New York State Public Radio.
Hey.
John Campbell is from the USA Today Network. Thank you both for being here.
Sure thing.
So let's talk about the budget first.
Oh, okay.
Let's get that out of the way, because
right.
We are taping at around 9 a.m. on
mm-hmm.
Friday. As of now, we do not have a budget deal. We don't know what's going on. There has been no updates. The legislative leaders, as we alluded to at the beginning of the show, have not spoken to us this entire week. And this is the budget week, where the budget is officially late. Karen, what's going on?
I have no idea, but it does feel very reminiscent of going back more than a decade ago when David Paterson was governor, and before that George Pataki, when the budget would often be late. And, you know, this time of the year, April 2nd or 3rd, you wouldn't know when it was going to be passed. And in those cases, sometimes it was weeks, even months, before they came to agreement. I don't think that's going to happen now, but it does feel like it's falling apart in a way that it hasn't in 10 years. Now, granted, I'm saying this Friday morning, maybe they'll have an agreement Friday afternoon. But it does seem like Governor Cuomo's iron grip on the budget for 10 years, where at least at this point, if it wasn't passed, you knew, like, when it was going to be passed, that they had agreements on things. That is not happening. It does seem like there's a real absence here. And, you know, you got to wonder, does it have something to do with the fact that the governor is now facing four pretty major scandals and that he's politically weakened?
That's a really good point. John, do we know why the budget is late? It came as a little bit of a surprise to me, because the One House budgets were pretty aligned and the governor's power seemed to be pretty diminished. So I guess I expected to have an on-time budget. Do we know why?
You know, the governor's power is pretty diminished, but the way the state of New York works, the governor has a lot of power still. You know, I mean, he can line item veto any number of things in the budget. And so that is still a threat that is difficult to overcome. Now, both in the Senate and the Assembly, they have Democratic supermajorities where they could overturn that. But, you know, to make the decision to go it alone without the governor is a big, big break from precedent. And that's something that, you know, at some point, the legislature might have to decide. But we do know some of the things that are still being debated. Taxes on the wealthy and on Wall Street. And we also know there's a big debate now going on about the Penn Station development and the area around Penn Station.
This is like a never-ending conversation.
Yeah,
Penn Station has been like my whole life and a half.
And yeah. Me too, and I'm way older than you. I want to live to see a nice Penn Station, right? You know?
Sorry, John, go ahead.
Well, it's just we know some of the things, but, you know, because we don't have these behind closed door negotiating sessions that the three of us and any number of our colleagues stake out for hours just to get a little blurb about the budget, we know less than we normally do because all this negotiation is happening on Zoom now.
And I would argue that we did put pressure on lawmakers in the past because they would have to come out and face the gauntlet of reporters and say something, at least, well, we have a tentative agreement, or feel like, oh, we don't want to do this another day and face those reporters. You know, let's try to get something done. So I think that did help. Now it's kind of, I mean, face it, we've had the pandemic for over a year. Nobody knows what day it is anyway. So what does April 1st matter? There's a little bit of that going on.
One big source of pressure that they're going to have to face is the state employees. If there's not some sort of budget in place by Monday, even if it's a temporary emergency spending plan, 39,000 state employees will see their paychecks delayed. And that is not a constituency that you want to make mad.
But I have seen them turn it around faster. I remember in the past the controller saying, well, it's got to be done by Monday. And somehow they can do it in a day. They don't like to, but definitely that is kind of a hard deadline early next week.
It depends on how much they want to talk on the floor when the bills actually come up and who wants to get that video that they can put out on Twitter of them debating the bill on the floor. Let's move on from the budget since we don't really know too much about it, unfortunately. Mm. I said at the top of the segment about Cuomo's book deal. We have some new details about it and some new controversies about it. Karen, can you lay it out a little bit? What's going on here?
I was actually going to refer to John because he did such a great article of laying out exactly what might have been done in our
So day. Wednesday night, the governor's office released, after months of reporters asking for it, released the permission he got from the Joint Commission on Public Ethics Deputy Counsel to write his book on the COVID pandemic, American Crisis, which came out last year, sold more than 40,000 copies, landed on the bestseller list. And they released that, and about an hour and a half later, the New York Times had a story that said Cuomo fielded offers north of $4 million for that book in the middle of the pandemic at a time where his global star was higher than it's ever been. But then, you know, if you looked at the approval from the Joint Commission on Public Ethics attorney, there were a lot of criteria that he had to follow. He had to follow 9 criteria. Essentially, he couldn't use state resources to promote the book or write the book. He couldn't advertise it or endorse it at any public events, etc. You know, he couldn't use state personnel. And we know now that he did a lot of those things. Now, the governor's office there's 3 senior members of his staff, at least, that worked on the book in some form or fashion: Rich Azzopardi, Stephanie Benton, and Melissa DeRosa. The governor's office claims they all volunteered their time, but that's a very thin line to walk. And at the very least, they're towing the line of what they were allowed to do.
And it sounds like they did spend quite a lot of time. It wasn't just an hour here, an hour there, you know, help me figure out this sentence. Like, Melissa DeRosa apparently was very involved in the editing of it. But that said, his staff, they don't punch a time clock. So I think it'd be hard to prove that they weren't volunteering because they work so much as it is. I'm sure they work well over 40 hours a week. So
there's a weird kind of time card situation where if they have to take time off if they work less than 7.5 hours in a day. But they all work more than 7.5 hours in a day. So there's also junior staffers that were asked to take notes, to type up notes, to print out copies and deliver it to the governor's mansion. And that seems to be a pretty clear violation of using state resources for book purposes. The governor's office claims it was, quote, incidental.
The other question is who's going to investigate this? Yeah. The Joint Commission on Public Ethics has a very poor track record. It's pretty much controlled by Cuomo. If it is a violation of the public officer's law, which it does seem to be a violation of, are they going to be able to authorize an investigation and carry it out? That's a big question.
And you know, if they were to carry it out, they could levy a fine of up to $10,000 if they found there was a violation of the public officer's law. And they could go after the value of the benefit he derived from that.
What?
And if the value is, you know, if he has a $4 million book contract, that's a very big value.
Wait, they could claw back $4 million?
Well, they could claw back whatever amount they decide that he derives specifically from that benefit.
Ah, okay.
So it depends on how aggressive they would want to be. And that, again, is if they were to find there was a violation of the public officer's
law. We should also mention the Assembly impeachment inquiry is also going to look at this book deal. And it's just kind of piling up one more thing of what's been relentless 2 months now that the governor has faced bad news nearly every other day. It's really been quite an onslaught and quite extraordinary that really he is still there.
It's been a bad month. But we have to leave it there. Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio, John Campbell from USA Today Network, thank you both for being here. And we'll see you back here next week with the latest. Thanks for watching this week's New York Now, and be well.